We have a family member who is very makpid, meticulous, that we only observe birthdays on the Hebrew calendar, and the English date means absolutely nothing, et cetera, et cetera. So there's two things to unpack there. One, first of all, I was listening, this took place a year ago, but I was just listening to it now. Dr. Tova Lichtenstein said in an interview that her father was very opposed to celebrating birthdays because the only mention of a birthday being celebrated in the Torah is Paro. So if Paro had a birthday party, that's not really something we want to emulate. That's a totally separate issue. But what's relevant for tonight, the question is, so is there any religious reason to prefer using the Jewish calendar for things that are relevant in life as opposed to the secular? Do we make any distinctions in any place? Obviously, when it comes to when Yom Tov is, that's obviously going according to the Jewish calendar. But when it comes to other things in life, doesn't matter. So our starting point is a pasuk in the Parsha Bo. This is source one, Shmos, Exodus chapter 12, verse 2. We will read Parshas HaChodesh, I believe, either next week or the week after. I don't remember how the calendar is falling. This month will be for you the beginning of months. It is the first for you of the months of the year. So this introduces the concept of having a calendar that's based on the moon, and that our calendar, in theory, starts with Nisan. So Ramban explains that the idea of calling this Rosh Chodeshim, Rosh Hu Lachem Lechodesh Hashanah, is that we count really numerically, that what we call Nisan is the first month, second month, third month, right? Obviously, when you look in the Torah, the holidays are identified by the first month, the seventh month, et cetera, not by any particular names. So why would we count that way? So Ramban says it's that so that we remember the great miracle of leaving Egypt. So every time we mention the months, we are recalling this miracle, and everything goes back on that. And just like when it comes to Shabbos, that we don't in Hebrew have any equivalent of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It's Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, because it's based on Shabbos. And there's a part of the idea of Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. It's not just to make Kiddush, but during the week to remember Shabbos. And when we say that today is Hayon Yom Chlishi B'Shabbos Shebo Hayu Halvim Amrim B'Veis HaMikdash, so we're counting towards Shabbos in a certain way. The same thing with the months as they are brought in the Torah, that they help us count based on Yetzias Mitzrayim, and every time we mention a month, we are making reference to that. With that said, so you actually already have in Tanakh the concept of Babylonian months. Already in Malachim, there is, I think, mention of some other months that we don't really use anymore. But we just read Megillat Esther the other day, and the month Adar comes up, and other such months come up in the Tanakh itself. And those names, Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan, et cetera, Nisan, Iyar. So those are not Hebrew names; those are Babylonian names. So Ramban points out. So what's the heter? What's the permission to use that? So he says that that's actually indicative of a related miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That when we use the Babylonian months, we're making a statement that, just like we left, God brought us out of Egypt into Eretz Yisrael, God brought us out of Babel and brought us to Eretz Yisrael. And mentioning those months is reminiscent of that. So that's what he says. I summarize source two, but that's the Ramban's approach. This actually makes me think in some ways that maybe in Israel, so they should use the Gregorian months of January because we left Gaul and went to Israel. But nonetheless, despite so those months, those Babylonian months, became part of the basic fabric of the Jewish calendar. But when it comes to the Gregorian months, so this is a question that's hotly debated by the Achronim. Did you have a question?
Well, I was going to say that we keep the Jewish calendar in sync with the secular calendar.
We keep the Jewish calendar in sync, not with the Gregorian calendar per se, but with the fact that because Pesach has to be in the spring because it's Chodesh Aviv, so it has to go according to the sun. So you're right in a certain sense that that since the Gregorian calendar is based on a solar calendar, so it seems as if we're keeping the Jewish calendar in sync with March, April, May, etc. But it's not really about the fact that it's what the non-Jews use. It's about the fact that the seasons have to work. So that is an interesting concept, right? So that's why we call it our calendar is really like a lunar solar. I don't know if there's a more advanced term, but we use a lunar solar calendar as opposed to Muslims who are observing Ramadan right now, that they are on a totally Ramadan can be at all different times of the year. It can sometimes be in December and sometimes in June because they use a real lunar calendar. P.S. Yesterday, I was in the Dunkin' Donuts in Washington Heights, and the women who were working behind the counter were wearing hijabs, and I asked them if they were fasting, and they said yes. I'm like, wow, you are serving food, Dunkin' Donuts, no less, all day. You know, if I was working in a vegan restaurant, I'd probably be okay fasting, but you're working in Dunkin' Donuts and you're fasting. That's quite remarkable. But I digress. So the Achronim discuss what we do about the Gregorian calendar. So the Maharam Shik, who is a student of Chasam Sofer, so we're talking about either the late 18th or sometime in the 19th century, and at a time where assimilation is becoming a real concern in Europe. So he was asked about a situation where a tombstone had not only did it have the vernacular instead of Hebrew, but it also was going according to the Christian calendar, the calendar according to Umos HaOlam Monim LaHaNotzri, right, based on Jesus. So what is the obligation of the Beis Din in that regard? What's the obligation of Chaver Kedisha in that regard? So he says, and this is in the bold, he says one thing, that to use a vernacular is one thing, but mashasimu b'mispar shana b'mispar notzri, the dati is that iser de oraisa, it is a Torah prohibition to use the Christian calendar, to use Christian dates. And that's based on the fact that there's to say, not supposed to mention names of other gods. So the crux of the issue is not necessarily actually the months and the days per se, I think. It's more about the years, because we count the years from zero, which is supposedly Jesus' birth. I don't know if it's, I think that's even somewhat debatable of whether he was born that year, but
we're about 5 years earlier.
Okay. So granted, maybe that's a reason to be, I think somebody actually writes that's a reason to be lenient, because it's not even accurate anyway. But in fact, we'll get to this in a little bit, but the normative way of counting years when you want to distinguish between before and after the Common Era is to use these, BC and AD, which are very clearly references to Jesus. So according to Maharam Shik, this is an Isser D'Oraisa, especially, again, I think in particular the years are problematic. And then he goes on to say, "Amona b'misparam nira lefi anyustaiti de'over be'isser ha'hu v'shem ilkim achayrim lo tazkiru." He says, he does not mince words here. He says that this is a mention of idolatry. This is absolutely prohibited for a Jew to do. So he says that to have this tombstone with the non-Jewish dates is an avera kfula muchpelis. It's there's a double transgression. So that's obviously very severe. Rav Yosef takes a little bit of a different approach, though.
Question?
Yeah.
Are we just talking about making reference to Common Era? That reference? You're not talking about writing a date. Like, we might have tombstones that have died in 1978.
So his point is that what does 1978 represent? It represents 1,978 years after.
So in other words,
Yeshua was born.
Yeah. So is
but even if you don't use AD and BC, he's saying that's still an Issa D'Oraisa because that whole framework is based on Christianity. So Rav Avadia Yosef takes a different tone. Again, it's I don't know how this plays in or doesn't play into it. It's fascinating that Rav Avadia Yosef, when discussing these things that relate to Christianity and Islam, it's fascinating to see where these poskim are coming from. Rav Avadia Yosef comes from Muslim countries. So he says that there are certain circumstances where maybe using a secular calendar would be violation, not of Avodah Zarah, not Shem Elokim Acherim Lo Tazkiru, but Uvichuko Seichem Lo Teilechu. So we're not supposed to follow the ways of the Gentiles, and that's a whole. I think that's going to be the next topic after Pesach. What it means to follow the ways of the Gentiles. But he says even that's not really a concern here, except for in a couple of circumstances. But he says, at the bottom, l'chein ha'ikr l'dina she'en b'zeh shum isur min adin. It is not technically prohibited. L'kim b'zeh yesh lahem al ma she'yismochu. Those who are using the secular dates have what to rely on. L'am yot tov al tikrei ra, l'chol she'en zorch gadol yesh l'chtov ha'chadashim v'ashanim l'mispar b'nei Yisrael. But where it's possible, you should use the Jewish calendar. B'prat po b'artzein ha'kedosha. So in Israel, it's obviously a little bit of a different story. You can probably, especially if you're living in religious neighborhoods, if you're writing a letter to somebody, so you can write that it's you can write the Hebrew date probably, and that works. So there's a sort of a subtle distinction that maybe in Chutz La'aretz you don't really necessarily have a choice sometimes. It's interesting that Maram Shik's question is actually about a tombstone, which is, there's no reason why a tombstone has to be written with a secular date per se. There might be reasons why people would want to do that, but there's no, there are no consequences for your interaction for your ability to function society if your tombstone only has a Hebrew date. But all those things are questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to what Tony brought up, with regards to the tombstone. So I don't know how we're poskening right now, but when you're doing a tombstone, should one therefore just only use the Hebrew name? Hebrew date?
I will get to that shortly. Because that is in fact discussed. The other thing
about what Gloria said, I know when we buried my parents, our rabbi would not let us put any English, not the date, not the name or anything on a tombstone, but we had a separate footstone where we put the English date and the English name, and we wanted the English date also, but it couldn't be on the main tombstone, but we put a footstone. And I've seen also a lot of wedding invitations by the Hasidim where they don't put, if they put the English year, they'll put L'misparam, the way they count. The way they can't, and that put, they won't leave it plain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that also gets mentioned in one of the other postgame that if you are going to do it, you should do it that way. Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting to know. One of other Rav Avadia's reasons for being lenient that gets mentioned earlier in the tshuva, it's not brought here, is that we might make a distinction between I'm using this to function in society versus I'm using this date, for a religious purpose. So if it's totally not a religious purpose, so he's the one who mentions that there's scholarly debate about whether this date is historically correct. But additionally, we might say it's a difference between, if you're writing a check, so that's different than using it for some sort of agenda of sorts. Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, source 5, he was the rabbi of the Shari Poseika Hospital, 20th century rabbi. So he writes, "Avayim lo mesayim el chazal ki im kote b'stam hatarich shemonim ha'amim em b'chol ki agavna mishum lo tazkir." Now, so he also disagrees with the Maram Shik, So he says that so his distinction, I neglected the part before the bold. So you make the distinction between what I mentioned before, that there's a difference between writing that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 70 AD versus CE. Right? If you're writing AD, so that becomes a real problem of mentioning other gods. Those letters literally stand for Anno Domini or something, you know, whatever, the year of our Lord. That's obviously a big problem. He says if you're not mentioning it that way, so he says that even for the Maram Shik, that's not necessarily Avodah Zarah, but it's not necessarily the right thing to do in terms of, you know, you should use the Hebrew date, but it's not the same level of Isser D'oraisa. And he goes on to say that if you have some sort of business need, or, you know, again, if you're writing checks or communicating with people in the world who are obviously not going according to the Jewish calendar, so there's obviously reasons, and that's that, you know, that that, you know, there's no reason to hold by prohibition there. So that's Tzitz Eliezer. Minchas Asher has a very Minchas Asher is Rabbi Asher Weiss, who is a rabbi living in Ramot, a very popular posek across the Torah community. I went to him a few months ago to get a bracha. He's really an amazing personality. So he has a very interesting approach to this, that he says that the Torah says HaChodesh HaZelechem Roshei Chodeshim. So we're talking about a Chodesh. So a month on the secular calendar is not a Chodesh. I mean, they call it a month, and it's you're counting something, but halachically it's not a Chodesh. So he says that there's no contradiction between, you know, there's no contradiction necessarily between using a secular date, which is, you know, I guess on some level he would say is arbitrary, doesn't have any sort of halachic status, versus, you know, but, you know, versus the Jewish date. So therefore he says that that's not necessarily a problem. Like, so let's say if, you know, if the non-Jews decided that they're going to count weeks, now it's going to become significant. Well, we'd say they can't count the weeks. So that's one point that he makes. And then going to Gloria's question, he says, "V'ikar de milta." This is on page 67, at the beginning of the new paragraph. "V'ikar de milta nira ol lelam ischus al minhag mibnei Yisrael yirein mushleim shalohi kpidu baza." There are many God-fearing Jews who did not hold by this prohibition of using a secular date, and therefore we have to find a way to justify it. When God-fearing Jews do something that seems a little bit, you know, that there's maybe a halachic problem with it, so we try to find a way to justify where we can. So the near ikar to get her mitzvah zoshia nisan be'inenu rosh kodashim nachshivena kerosh. The mitzvah is that we should think of Nisan as being our beginning of the year. But we don't have a mitzvah to only use, you know, the first month and the second month according to the Hebrew calendar. And he points out that even, you know, again, once you get into Tanakh, so... So they start using names. So what? So the Tanakh was wrong also. So he says that for things that are of significance, I mean, this gets into maybe again the tombstone question or the wedding invitation question. So maybe for those kinds of things, maybe you should use a Hebrew date. And the truth is, we don't really we don't do that so much. He says in those areas, it probably is good to use a Jewish date, but otherwise we don't have to be so particular. And he says that I can't remember now who said this before, but if you write Lamin Yanam or Lamis Param, if you say that it's the year 2024 according to their count, so that also indicates that you're using it for a functional purpose, but it's not prohibited. Okay. So there's more that's Tzvi Yehuda Cook was against using the secular date. And then there's a debate between Rabbi Avadia Yosef and Tzitz Eliezer about, let's say, is it better to use the number dates or the names of the actual months, right? Is it better just to, you know, to write, to always write 3/26/24, or is it better to say March 26, 2024? So, So Rabbi Vadi Yosef says that you should use the secular names. Did I just lose everybody? What's going on here? Okay. Rabbi Vadi says you should use the secular names because when you start counting months, so that's getting into the Jewish ideas. Stelier says it's the opposite because of the Christian, you know, the names are Arbans. Refer to pagan deities, I think. Is that accurate? Possibly. Yeah. So he says in that case.
March is from Mars. Mars.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought. Right. So Cecilia says if it says you have to better to use the numbers. Okay. So that's one issue is the calendar again. So they read in Bala here. It's fascinating. I didn't know this. Says it is noteworthy that all banks in Israel accept the Hebrew date as well as secular date on checks and official documents. In addition, a law was passed at Knesset that every official letter must have the Jewish date. Okay, so that's a wonderful thing about having our own homeland. I mean, you know, everybody says that that Judaism and Zionism are two separate entities. I mean, this is like proof if you really live, if you're really living it. So this is just but one example of the importance of having a Jewish state. But again, for some chutz ha'aretz, there are a lot of reasons to be leading in many areas, and where we can use a Jewish month, we should. Okay. Another question that comes up is receiving charity from
Rabbi Kerbel.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There seem to be two, like, so when you're writing like a check, do you use, there's two different responses here. So is it better for us to write like marked with the number or marked with the name? Because both have their problems.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think both the, you know, you can rely, I mean, right, you can't obviously do both of them. So I think the general way that we operate here in America is that we're not really so particular about this. If you're hearing about this for the first time, that means that in every shul publication and Jewish organizational publication, you know, you've never had had an issue. So I don't think we're all that particular. And again, Rav Vadia and Tzitzil Yezer were in Yerushalayim, so in some ways they had the luxury of being able to debate about whether you use March or the number three. For us, we're not so particular. Although I have to say, I think my inclination is that Tzitzil Yezer makes a slightly stronger argument, but again, we're not so particular. So there's a question about receiving charity from Gentiles. Does that come with a problem of Avodah Zarah? So Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Amar Rav Nachman Ochle Davar Acher Psulin Le'edus. People who eat the other thing, which Rashi means to accept charity, you know, you're eating from the money of Gentiles. So they are Psulin Le'edus. They're not allowed to be witnesses, but that's only if they do it in public. But in private, it's not necessarily as bad, and it maybe makes a difference about whether if there is no other possibility, if the only way to receive the charity is if you go up in public and get the handout. So that's a little bit different. So why would this be considered problematic? So Rashi says that there's a Chil Hashem element to this. So what's a Chil Hashem element? It's interesting. It's not really about our argument. It's Levush says Sha'omer Magoyim Kama Maguda Umazo She'em Farnesin Aniyehem. How terrible is this nation that they don't support their own poor? And in some ways, that's a fair argument. We should be supporting our own poor. It is a little bit of indictment on us if we're not sustaining those who need to be sustained. I guess a less charitable way to look at it from their perspective is, if there's a sort of anti-Semitic trope to the fact that Jews are poor, because as I said on Shabbos afternoon, for those who are at the Shir, no matter what, if Jews are rich, then it's a problem. If Jews are poor, that's a problem. So you can't really win there. So the Gemara in Bava Basra has a discussion. Yiferah Hormiz sent money to Rabbi Ami. He didn't take it. He sent it to Rava, and he did take it. So Rabbi Ami was not very happy with Rava. Rava's argument was Shalom Malchus, that if a non-Jewish government is giving you money, so you to say I'm not accepting your filthy money is not going to create good relations. So Rabbi Amir's argument is, you know, why does he have to give you know, Jews the money? He should give it to the Gentile poor. They have enough to take care of. So that's a little bit of a discussion. So the Shulchan Aruch says in source 13, to get to the Psak here, it's at page 70, source 13. Asar Yisrael li told Staka min ha'ovde kochavim b'far hasya. So we shouldn't accept Staka from use ovde kochavim. It's hard sometimes when we use the term ovde kochavim versus nachrim. So are we talking about real idolaters, or are we talking about ovde kochavim just in the broader sense of Gentiles? And it's not always so clear. But here it sounds like it's saying you're not supposed to accept charity from Gentiles in public. And like the Gemara said, if you can't accept the tzedakah privately, so then at the end of the day you are allowed to accept it publicly. So Shevet Alevi, Rav Shmuel Vazner, also a relatively contemporary posek, passed away about 10 years ago, says that there's even a little bit chil Hashem when you accept money in private. Maybe that goes back to the idea of lavush, the fact that the perception of that.
Does charity only relate to money?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I mean, an organization, which I guess at this point is not a Catholic run, but Calvary, which was run by the hospice care, is a charitable organization. And unfortunately, there are Jewish patients there who, you know, need their services. Is that accepting charity?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be, but also when you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice. I mean, I think that's, I think that we're talking about a service also, if people have a particular expertise and that's why you're there. So that's, whereas, you know, money is money and can be, you know, in theory, again, you know, Jewish organizations should be able to come up with that. If we're talking about particular expertise, that's maybe a little bit of a different story, but I don't know entirely. So Tzitz Eliezer mentions that perhaps that there's a distinction. So they brought a non-Jewish volunteer from Chutz La'aretz and to Shaarei Tzedek, and whether it was a, you know, they could accept her. This is your question. Could they accept her as a volunteer? Because maybe that's like charity. So he says that, in theory, you should know what religion she's coming from. Because he says maybe there's a distinction between somebody who's a Ben Noach, who's not an idolater. They're not Jewish, but they don't do idolatry. So maybe there's a difference between that and somebody who's actually a pagan, somebody who's actually an idolater. So that distinction helps us in many ways. That helps us in many, many cases. So Tzitz Eliezer does seem to imply that could in theory involve the services also, but perhaps it's not really a concern. For organizations to accept money, there's sort of another issue. And this is a very fascinating one that's brought by Rav Dov Lior, who was the rabbi of Kiryat Arba, chief rabbi of Kiryat Arba. So he was asked whether a Christian organization is allowed to donate to an organization that does work related to Har HaBayit, to the Temple Mount. So you might say, oh, great, you know, we'll take any money that we can get to Har HaBayit and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and Christians are our best friends. And he says, no, really should not do that, because there's a concern that if they have a particular agenda and they're doing it because maybe, maybe they have a missionary agenda in mind. Maybe they believe that that when the Jews are in Israel, so Yeshu will return. So, out of those considerations, he says that could be a real problem. That is actually like a real question. So he says it's one thing if you accept a charity from a Gentile just because, you know, I know this guy, I know he needs money, I'm going to give him a little money to support. That's different than giving to an organization where, like, there could be some real problematic motivations for giving the money. So not so halacha l'maisa for most of us to deal with, but it is a bigger question. Okay, I want to, and I'll try to do this. I don't want to keep people too long, but it's a very fascinating issue when it comes to avodah zarah that I don't think people are always aware of. That when it comes to images, particularly of the sun, moon, and stars in constellations. So this starts with a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, on source 17 on page 72. It says Dmut Surot Levana Hayul Rabba and Gamliel Betava Vakoto Baliato. So Masechta Rosh Hashanah talks about the issue of of sanctifying the months because Rosh Hashanah starts on the new month. So in terms, so when they used to declare the month based on whether or not you see the moon, so when the witnesses would come to Rabban Gamliel and said we saw the moon, he would show them different models of the moon and did it look like this? Did it look like that? That's what Rabban Gamliel would do. So great. It sounds like a very wise thing to do. Pedagogically makes a lot of sense. It helps you get to the bottom of the matter. The Gemara says, Mishari, is that allowed? Why would it not be allowed? You're not allowed, when it says that you shouldn't make other gods, etc., that you also can't make images of my attendants, meaning the sun and the moon and the stars, which, P.S., we're worshipped in pagan societies. It's not far-fetched. So one answer given by Rav Huna is lo tasun iti, lo tasun oti. You shouldn't make it as a god, but if it's not being made as a god, that's a different story. So what about these other shamashin? So maybe it only refers to the mystical luminaries, Yofanim, the Srafim, the Chayas HaKodesh, Malchim Shares. So Abai says, in fact, that's what the main Torah prohibition was. But what about the constellations in the lower heavens or the upper heavens? You're not allowed to make images of these Srafim and Chayas HaKodesh, etc. What about the lower images of the lower heavens, sun, moon, and stars, and whatnot? So what's the concern? So maybe it's just that I'm not allowed to worship, but maybe I'm allowed to fashion it. Maybe I'm allowed to make it. But it says lo tasun. You're not allowed to lo tasun iti lo tasun kidmut shamashai. Could go on chama ulvana kochayim mazalos. So the Gemara says maybe you're not allowed to make the sun, the moon, the stars, and the constellations. And I'm on top of page 73. So with Rabban Gamliel, he says no. Rabban Gamliel is different. Acher masulo. Rabban Gamliel is different because non-Jews made the images of the moon frame. So he didn't make it. Lo tasun. You can't do it, but other people can do it. So for example, Rabbi Yehuda had somebody else do it, and he was rebuked for that. So in the case of Rabbi Yehuda, that's when it was protruding. So maybe there's a difference when it's three-dimensional versus two-dimensional. Because three-dimensional maybe is like, a little bit more of a statue, becomes like a little bit more of an object versus like when it's, something done 2D. So it's just, stick art, who cares about stick art? A statue is maybe more of a real issue. And then there's a question of whether it's protruding versus sunken. So maybe if the image is sunken, so maybe that's better also. And then they bring up the issue of chashad, whether we have to be worried about, even if we can come up with different leniencies, do we have to be worried about what people might perceive if they see any sort of image of the sort? So maybe it's different when it's public. So maybe some of these leniencies are easier to rely on. But what about Rabban Gamliel? So he was the Nasi. He was, sometimes he was alone, but he was the Nasi. There were people around him. And the Gemara concludes, so there might be a difference between using a model in order to teach people. If you need to, if there's a scientific reason why you need to understand how the luminaries work, so maybe that's one thing. If you need to teach people how to identify the moon for the purpose of mitzvah, maybe that's one thing. But to draw it for decoration, or worse, might be other issues. So what we have so far is a distinction between whether something is 2D or 3D. And the main areas of concerns are heavenly bodies, the both the upper heavens, the Chayos Kodesh, etc., and the sun, moon, and stars. What about the human beings? And then what about animals? So there's a whole Machlokas Rishonim. There's a dispute among the Rishonim about what we do here. And this is this is a little complicated, so we're going to try to take this a little bit slowly, try to end by 8:30. So on page 74, source 18, Tosfos says, V'im tomar ma'ilo mishani ditzuris levana lo'aisa boletes. So maybe Rabban Gamliel's moon was not protruding. It wasn't 3D. And maybe that's why it was permitted. Why didn't the Gemara say that? So the answer is, Kibachama uvana umazalos enchil bin boltin ulshokin v'chimber kia shokin heim velo mafli behachi. So the issue of whether it's 2D or 3D, we don't make that distinction between the luminaries, right? Because the luminaries, when you see a sun, we see a star. So to us, it looks 2D, even though they go into space. It's obviously, you know, they're actually 3D. To us, it looks 2D. So the problem is, it's just as problematic whether it's 2D or 3D. But when do we make the distinction between 2D and 3D? When it comes to partsufi, when it comes to faces, when it comes to portraits. So then to make a statue of a hero is one thing, but to draw a picture is a different story. So that's what Tosfos says, and the Rambam seems to take this approach as well. You're not allowed to make these images. You can't even do it when it's 2D. But he says that's different than animals and trees and the like, and you're even allowed to make them 3D, says the Rambam. Okay, so one approach of the Rambam and Tosfot is that the luminaries are problematic whether or not they're protruding, but for faces and certainly for animals, for trees, even if they're protruding, you can make a sculpture. You know, you can make a sculpture of a tree. That's not a problem. The Ramban is
Remember when they were this time of the Gemara, they knew that these were 3Ds. The moon, the stars, because when you look at it, they figured it out, or this was way back.
it seems like they had some sort of sense. Well, first of all, the question is not even meaning. Part of the question is like, do they realize that the sun is protruding? But even if you put that aside, to make, to make a model, a 3D model of something like that, could still be problematic because statues are actually used for bowing down. So. Regardless of whether or not they knew that the sun is, it seems like they had a sense of it. It's an interesting question. So Ramban is strict when it comes to faces, when it comes to portraits as well, that we're not allowed to make them. So he says the merciful one only distinguishes between raised or sunken when other people made it. And there the rabbi said, if it was sunken, it's permitted. But if it's raised, it is prohibited due to chashad. Okay, so according to Ramban, I personally am not allowed to draw the portrait. So all the Gedolim portraits and hanging people's home, all the above Rebbe pictures, according to Ramban, that's a big problem if a Jew makes it. If a non-Jew makes it, then that's a different story. But if a Jew makes it, then that's a problem. And certainly when it's 3D, we have an even bigger problem.
I hate to ask this, but that was male figures, or they were talking about female.
So regardless, the question of propriety there is a different story. But we're talking about what is art. We're not talking about modesty. Okay. So then we have a third opinion of the Ritva. So he says that certain things you're not allowed to make. There's no concern of suspicion of idolatry, so you're allowed to retain any such thing. So he goes on to say that we derive this from that the shape of the sun and the moon and the heavenly bodies are only prohibited if they are raised, but if they are sunken, then it's not necessarily a problem. And the problem with Rabban Gamliel's moon was that it was raised. That's what the whole Gemara is talking about. So according to Ritva, if your picture of the solar system is flat 2D, you don't have an issue. So how do we paskin on this? So I discovered that the Shulchan Aruch that they copy and pasted here is missing some very important words. It got me very confused until I realized I was missing words. So on page 76, source 22, Shulchan Aruch says, Asur litzayir tzurot shebamador shechina. You're not allowed to make images in the sphere of the shechina, kagon, arba panim, bahad ehadadeh, v'chein tzurot srafim, v'fanim, malchei ha-shares. V'chein tzurot adam levado. You're also not allowed to draw a face of a person by itself. These are prohibited to do. I feel him lenoy, even if it's for decoration. If it was committed by a Gentile, then you're not even allowed to retain it. So then it said, Shulchan Aruch says, "Bamedvar mamarim bitboletes." That's only for their protruding. So if you're going to weave something, you're going to weave an image, or you're going to draw something, you're going to draw a mural on the wall. So that is permitted. Mutar lasotam. But v'tzuras chamal vanam v'kochavim asar bein boletes bein chokas. You're not allowed to draw the sun, the moon, and the stars, whether they are 3D or whether they're 2D. But if it's for instructional purposes, so all of them are permitted. So the year was 2015-2016 at Yeshiva University, and they were commissioning a mural for this one particular thing. And the artist, who I don't know if she was Jewish or not, I don't think she was observant. So she drew this whole thing with the planets and the sun and whatnot. She had to redo the whole mural because the Rosh Yeshiva walked by there at some point and they see that there's this whole mural with the sun and the moons and stars. And this Shulchan Aruch tells us explicitly that you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to have that. Even though it's 2D. So other things, it sounds like everything else you're allowed to have a 2D, if it's not explicitly about Avodah Zarah, except for this. That seems to be what it is.
Is that literally the sun, the moon, and stars?
Huh?
Yeah.
Avodah Zarah. That's not how we...
But Mars, Venus, and...
No, and all the luminaries, right? And again, the Shach makes the point that because we see them as two-dimensional, that's where the problem comes in. So on pages 78, 79, it's getting late, so I don't want to... belabor the point too much. So there is a question about photographs and portraits that Poskim dealt with. So Rav Cook and Das Kohen says that there are some Hasidim Shem Nimnaim Lotzalim Espunasam. There are some Gedolim who don't want to get pious people who don't want to be a photograph. They don't give people permission to draw them or to take pictures of them. He says that there's a place for that. Certainly, if one wants to be go above and beyond, there's no technical prohibition of photographs. So especially if it's for the purpose of a mitzvah, if it's for the purpose of love of Torah, right? So to have your gedolim pictures is fine because it brings people to love the Torah and to respect and revere the Torah. So Rav Cook says that technically speaking, that's permissible, and everyone's fine with that. So Shulchan Aruch says that the only prohibition is when it's... the only reason to be strict is if it's the whole body, but if it's just the head, then there's definitely no prohibition. And the Rama says that is our minhag. So that's what Rav Cook says, that in theory, if one wants to be mahadir, if one wants to be really careful, there shouldn't be a complete full body picture.
You see the opposite of that somewhere here about. You can't have just a face.
So that's when a statue. That's when we have a problem. That's I think that that's what they're again. There's some people who think that it's all problematic, but Rav Kook, according to Rav Kook, that'll only be a problem if it's a sort of a sculpture, if it's a statue. But for a picture, better that it's just the face.
Rabbi Kerbel, this when they published this, Rabbi Bamberger has a whole series. This has all the Gedolim and everything in it, and he also mentions about, you know, different viewpoints on the photographs.
Okay, good to know. So the Taz says that even headshots are potentially problematic. So then the question is, so Rav Kook mentioned that some people don't let other people take pictures of them. So do I have the right to tell other people to never put a camera where I could possibly be in the background of the image? And the Mishnah Halachos, Rav Menashe Klein from Borough Park, says that you do have that right and that responsibility. You know, I have the right to say that I don't want to be photographed. I mean, you know, nowadays you have to sign like releases for that kind of stuff anyway. But the Chut Shani, forget who this is. The Chut Shani, Rav Nissim Karelitz from Bnei Brak, says that you don't have the right, especially when most people are not strict, especially with digital cameras. So we're not so strict like the Ramban that faces even 2D are a problem, or even full. The Menaga Olam, I think even by Gedolim, I think you see Haredi Gedolim all the time. You know, you can see pictures of their whole body. It's almost impossible to avoid. So in that sense, we're not so strict. But again, with the things in the sky, so that we have more of a problem based on Sukkim, Gemara's concerns of Avodah Zarah. Something. So I took a picture last year of a sunrise, and I wasn't sure if I should have done that or not. I asked Rabbi Arya Leibowitz. I was in Florida, so I went to the beach. I took a picture of the sunrise, and then I realized, oh, is this a problem? So I don't think I caught the full sun. So I don't remember if that was a leniency, if he had had another reason. But if it's on the full sun, so there is also what to rely on there, as far as I know. All right. Thank you, everyone. Next week, next week will be Monday night, Bezras Hashem, and we'll talk about the laws of the Seder for the next 2 weeks.